Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is episode number 135 with Dr. Becky Cohn Vargas. Well, hi there. My name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders from across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Becky, we explore a number of interesting topics like the definition of identity safety, how identity safety impacts student achievement, addressing bullying and intolerance, and why it doesn't work to be colorblind and ignore differences. Thanks for spending some time with me and listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show. But before we jump into the episode, I would like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. I'd like to share an incredible free resource for the better leaders that listen to this podcast. It's the Top 10 Fundraising Ideas for 2018, and that's available at schoolzonepodcast.com. And just like the title says, you'll get the top 10 school fundraising ideas for 2018 when you download it at schoolzonepodcast.com. Well, hey there, better leaders. I am excited to connect with a new guest, Dr. Becky Cohn Vargas, who is an independent consultant who has spoken on the subject of how to combat bullying, create identity-safe classrooms, and positive school climates at conferences, schools, and universities across the U.S. She's been hosted at the White House twice, where she briefed President Obama's education staff. Her book, Identity Safe Classrooms, Places to Belong and Learn, is co-authored with Dr. Dorothy Steele and was published by Corwin Press. She's worked as director of Not in Our School, a bullying and intolerance prevention project of the Working Group. She's also spent over 35 years in public education in California. Becky co-owns the Makengu Preserve, 190 acres of virgin rainforest in Nicaragua near the border with Costa Rica. She's been leading college student groups there for the last 5 years to do research and community service projects. Becky, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So let's start from the beginning. And can you give me an idea of what inspired you to pursue a career in education?
Yes, I am the daughter of educators, the granddaughter of educators as well. Both my mother and my grandmother were teachers, and they also were subject to horrific hate when they lived in Germany during Hitler. And so the combination of those two things, the fact that they were focused on education and the fact that we need to stop that kind of hate has inspired me to work with young people to make our world a place free of hate, free of intolerance of all kinds.
Yeah, I can only imagine how such a traumatic and challenging period would have formed those experiences and those feelings, right, that have now motivated you to do this incredible work with educators all around the U.S. I'm curious, could you describe your career and how you came to feel that creating belonging and inclusion was crucial to student learning?
Yes, I actually started my career in early childhood education. I wanted to start with the youngest of the young, and I thought we could influence that kind of empathy in very young students. And by the time I was 25, I became a director of a childcare center in a preschool where I immediately saw that it was a private preschool, and I saw that there were winery owners. It was in the wine country in Sonoma County, California. And the winery owners and the chemists and people were able to put their children in that preschool. And so I started getting state funding to make it a preschool that also served the needs of the people who picked the grapes in the wineries. And I turned it into a bilingual school. That was back in the 70s. So that kind of launched me in a whole moment of trying to really make positive change. And then I went from there to Nicaragua, which at the time, it didn't even have preschools on a state and public level or kindergartens. only really rich people could go. And I went in the 80s, right after there was a revolution, and the people there wanted to create an education system starting in preschool for all children. So that's where I continued my early childhood work, and I made educational television shows to train teachers. That's also where I began the spirit of teacher education and training educators. The idea, just like you're doing, of spreading really good ideas across to many educators. And from there, I came back to the U.S. and started working with bilingual classrooms in Oakland, California. And actually, working with low-income families was really a powerful experience. Suddenly, I found myself in Palo Alto, where I was working again, just like in Healdsburg, with a mixture of people mm-hmm. who were low-income and bused to Palo Alto. And among some of the people who had a lot of money and who had a lot of resources and access. And that was some of my most important work in equity. And that's where I met the project that's called Stanford Integrated Schools Project. And I learned about identity safety. And identity safety is the idea that we need to create environments where people of all backgrounds, whether it's different social identities in terms of their race, their ethnicity, gender, socioeconomic level, all those differences, people need to feel accepted and welcomed and valued. And then they will succeed in school. And identity safety became, basically, it's my bucket list that hopefully one day everyone will know that idea, because it's so powerful and it's so all-inclusive. And it's really what we're all about, being able to live ourselves, our lives, and our identities freely and in a positive way. So that's why I'm here today.
Love it. And this is a great message to definitely share with the Better Leaders, Better Schools tribe. We want to create schools that are welcoming and safe and honor everybody's identity, where they're coming from within our school community. That's a non-negotiable, I think, for us. I'm curious, can you get tactical with the school leader listeners and those that want to create such a positive and welcoming environment? What are some things they can do starting today to actually create that environment?
Great. Well, first of all, I want to mention that there's the concept of being colorblind or ignoring differences. And we really learned with the Stanford study that ignoring differences actually does not help people. And in the U.S., we learned this with Don't Ask, Don't Tell. They thought, oh, okay, we'll have the army. We won't keep anybody out, but we'll just tell people to hide their identity. It didn't work. When people's identities are invalidated, whether it's in the military through a don't ask, don't tell policy, or in Germany, what happened to my mother, having her passport taken away and her German nationality taken away. And then she ended up traveling with documents with big Jewish stars on them in yellow. That undermines a person's sense of self, and belonging can't take place when we feel invisible. So I just want to highlight that, because many school leaders and many educators, you know, all children must learn, no child left behind, but you are left behind if your identity is invalidated. So that's a basic principle in this idea of identity safety. But actually, the book that I wrote with Dorothy Steele, which is called Identity Safe Classrooms, Places to Belong and Learn, is a whole array of practices that can happen in the classroom that make identity safety for students. And it came out of research at Stanford, done by Stanford in a school district. 84 classrooms were visited multiple times over the year by several observers who just watched what the teachers did. And they discovered that if teachers did certain things, students felt more identity safe, they felt more liking of school, they thought their teachers liked them better, and they felt better at school. And those concepts we call the components of identity safety. And so what can a principal do today? They can begin to look at their school and the concepts of those components and see how to make it safe in the classroom and across the school. And I'll explain a little bit what those components are. And by the way, the book Identity Safe Classrooms, Places to Belong and Learn, focused at the elementary level, but I'm now working with three high schools in a project to create the same materials for the secondary level, because the idea works across all grade levels. So what are those components? Well, let me go over them. You won't be surprised, because you've probably been hearing about them all along, but it's the combination. So we have one area that we call child-centered teaching, and we actually broke the components into four domains. Trying to make it easier, I'll start with a C. Child-centered teaching, cultivating diversity as a resource, classroom relationships, and caring classroom environments. And I'll kind of go through this. In a short podcast, I mainly want to give the big picture of it.
Yeah,
but
sure.
There are many, many strategies. And on our website, Identity Safe Classrooms, Places to Belong and Learn, identitysafeclassrooms.org, excuse me, and I'll send you that link. We have the outline of the different components. But for example, listening for student voices, it's helping students get the confidence to participate, finding many ways for their voices to be heard. If you have different languages in the classroom, you may have sign signals that kids learn, hand signals to express their feelings and ideas. You help kids learn how to evaluate their work together, and you really give student voices an important place in the classroom. At the same time, we say, check yourself. Look at who's participating. Is everybody getting a chance to share? Because you're always working in an identity-safe environment to create equal status. So as a leader, it's walking through your classrooms thinking about this, looking at whose voices are being heard and whose aren't, and helping the teachers find tools and ways to do that. I'm not going to probably be able to go through the whole thing, but I'll kind of swing through some more. Teaching for understanding, making sure the students really understand and can articulate for themselves what they're learning, not just spoon feeding them. And I know those ideas are out there, but again, it's looking at all your students. Are your English learners equally participating in understanding the content? I've seen students who can get very good at learning to read the words, and they sound like they understand it, but when you talk to them, they don't. Another area is focus on cooperation, another one of the components. When you think about diversity, the Western cultures and the American value of individualism is very, very strong. But many other cultures value cooperation and collaboration in a whole different way. And actually, it comes through across, you don't have to stereotype one culture. It's true among African Americans, it's true among Native Americans, true among Mideastern people and Asians, a much more of a sense of collaboration. So we're not talking just about, you know, cooperative learning lessons. We're talking about learning to cooperate all day long as a team in the class, as a team at school, and encouraging spontaneous helping and caring. And then the last component in the child-centered teaching or student-centered teaching is classroom autonomy. And it's helping students become aware of themselves, monitor themselves, take responsibility for both their learning and their behavior. Again, it's all of this together. And it's thinking about all the different students you have in the class and finding pathways and scaffolding them toward it. The next area domain we call cultivating diversity as a resource. And by that we mean is making the value of student differences come forward in ways that don't stigmatize anyone. So it's a very sensitive area. Sometimes multicultural education has actually turned out to stigmatize kids or create them into that exotic other. We're now celebrating them, those people. And the idea of diversity as a resource is students bringing their diversity into their learning all day long. So it doesn't become an exotic other, but it encourages cooperative independence, getting to know each other, having students bring music from their house, bring their families into the school, also addressing and intervening whenever stereotyping and racism pokes up its head, which is happening more and more, especially this last year. It's supporting students who have parents of the same gender to feel accepted by making the class welcoming. And I have a film that I made called for elementary level called our family that just shows all the different kinds of families. Also, as part of cultivating diversity as a resource, we have high expectations and academic rigor. When No Child Left Behind swept across the United States, teacher expectations went down and rigor went down, and it just became a lot of rote learning. And many educators today were trained during that period. They went to programs where all they were learning about in their pre-service was raising test scores. And so what leaders need to do is inspire teachers and help give them models and examples of how to create those high expectations and push a lot of rigor into the classroom, as well as the other component of a challenging curriculum that comes from the student lives. Again, a lot of this is part of what the principal might do as part of evaluation. Not critiquing the teachers, because that isn't the goal, but giving them opportunities to expand their thinking about these ideas. Two more areas to cover, and I know you have been going pretty long here. Classroom relationships. We talk a lot about that, and I know a lot of principals have relationship, teacher-student relationship at the heart of the work. And it's being, again, very intentional, building those relationships that create equal status, warmth by the teacher, but also combined with really being there to scaffold those students. And again, that's the role the principal plays in setting the model of the kind of relationships among the staff that create identity safety for the staff, so they feel confident and valued and appreciated and can pass it on to their kids. And again, it's about positive student relationships. And that's where the principal has a really important role in making sure these positive relationships don't happen only in the classroom, but what's going on in the schoolyard? What's going on the way to school and on the way home? How are the students teaching each other? And what can be done as a school to really promote those positive relationships? And helping teachers know when to intervene. A lot of times these days, teachers are getting messages from their administrators, no suspensions. And that's a really important thing, but then teachers need to know what to do. They need to be supported in creating environments in their classrooms that are positive, so that it's not about keeping kids in class who are misbehaving. It's about creating environments where kids are less likely to misbehave and providing supports for their teachers. The last area, the last domain is called caring classrooms, and that's the overall teacher in classroom environment. And one of the components we have is called teacher skill. And I personally don't like that name, but the idea is that if you don't have a management system in your classroom that's not chaotic, where kids are feeling safe and included in an environment that's calm, you really can't do any of the other things. So it's, again, the teacher is really supported by the principal, and especially new teachers, and figuring out ways to set up that environment for success, to create the procedures and the reasonable expectations and consequences that teach rather than punish. I know restorative justice is something many schools are doing, and that's something the principals can take a big role in bringing to the school. Two more, and we're through the whole thing. Emotional and physical comfort. You feel the minute you walk into a classroom, and as an administrator, I don't know if I mentioned that I was a principal of K-8 as well as elementary level. I've been a superintendent, and that you can feel the climate, and even from one door to the next room, that emotional and physical comfort the students feel. And so helping teachers set that stage and create an environment where students don't feel invisible, where they feel their teachers are fair, where they feel that their positive presuppositions, the words teachers use, are expecting the best. And that's the same as true for the principal. As opposed to berating teachers or criticizing teachers, it's that positive presupposition. I know you can do this. I'm going to help you get there. And finally, the last area we call attention to pro-social development, which is kind of like SEL, social emotional learning, but it goes beyond that because it's all day long. It's not just lessons to teach kids social skills. It's living those skills every day, empathy, mutual respect, respecting different points of view, and integrating that pro-social teaching into the academic curriculum. Now, I have a strategy sheet that's 20 pages long with strategies on how to do this and why they fit with identity safety, and I'll be happy to share them with you for the administrators who come to your site.
Yeah, that'd be tremendous value, Becky. We'd really appreciate that. And I enjoyed your high-level overview of identity-safe classrooms. And while you were sharing, you know, I browsed around the website too. And listeners, you know that these great resources that we bring in, week out on the show will be linked up for you in the show notes. And you can visit one of Becky's websites, identitysafeclassrooms.org. And if you click on resources, if you click on activities, there are different things that you can download, like putting listening for students' voices into practice, or putting challenging curriculum into practice, and one more, putting classroom autonomy into practice. So those are those tactical things that you can implement starting today. And Becky, again, thanks for the high-level overview of identity safe classrooms. This podcast is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, podcasts for educators and podcasts by educators. Listen to all the great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. That's edupodcastnetwork.com. Now, you shared some research about Stanford and kids feeling connected to schools, is what I heard. How does identity safe teaching help improve achievement as well?
Well, it makes sense. The logic of it makes sense. If you feel safe, if you feel listened to, you're going to engage with school. And that's going to definitely lead to improvement of achievement, as opposed to the converse, where you're not listened to, where you don't feel part of it, you shut down. And so it's how our brains work. When we feel better, when we feel connected, we thrive. Also, within identity safety are elements that promote that. Student autonomy gives students a chance to learn and take responsibility for their learning. That's going to help them in achievement. Students having high expectations for themselves. We definitely have a lot of research out there. When students feel there are high expectations for them, they do better. It's actually built into our biology. I heard about some research with rats. I know this sounds really funny, but they labeled the rat cages and they put smart and dumb on these different rat cages. And then they had the handlers work with them. And would you know it? And obviously the rats didn't understand language. The way they were treated, they acted in accordance with the label that was on their cage. And it's just part of how we are. So that sense of belonging really matters. And of course, bringing the diversity in, students see role models. They say, oh, people like me can be good in school, can become doctors and lawyers and astronauts. All of that contributes to improved academics.
And how does it help prevent and address bullying and intolerance?
Well, let me go into that a little more. I also created another set of resources called the Identity Safe and Inclusive School Program, a guide to eradicating bullying and intolerance and creating belonging. And the way that program works, that's more of a school-wide model for school leaders. And it's basically a how to create that environment free of bullying and intolerance. And how do you do that? First of all, you build empathy by refuting and countering negative stereotypes, getting people to learn about others who are different than them, and taking action on a school-wide level to focus on this. And so that program involves four different parts. There's a part that is staff development. So there's actually a section that's staff and professional development where we created a 6-session teacher education session about what is bullying and intolerance, about stereotyping and the way that impacts intolerance, about what is identity safety, about facilitating hard conversations in the classroom, and about introduction to implicit bias, and then trauma-informed practice. Getting all your staff on the same page with a knowledge base about bullying and tolerance is a first step. Then the next step in this program is a classroom lessons guide. And so we actually have classroom lessons, six classroom lessons for the students. So the same thing is true with the student. Just like getting all your teachers to understand these issues, educating all your students. And again, they're short modules that can be incorporated into one classroom lesson, like if you have a life skills group, or they could be broken up in different weeks, different departments teach it. And this particular guide is particularly for high school and middle school. And then the third thing is a student-led campaign guide. Let the students take the lead in influencing their peers and stopping bullying. So the overall program includes creating an awareness of what identity safety is about and looking at equity across your school with the staff and creating a plan together with getting everyone speaking the same language and students actually playing a leading role. And so stopping bullying can really happen if kids learn how to be upstanders, how to intervene, and when bullying takes place in a safe way. There's research that was done by UCLA that if someone intervenes, 70% of the time the bullying will stop within that intervention, because it's like they're seeing their peers say, no, this isn't cool. And we teach them how to do that in a safe way and always getting help if they feel it's not safe to intervene. Then those ideas we have on the not on our school website, which is notinourschool.org. And there we have hundreds of films, short films, as well as a chance to get this guide.
I love that too. You know, just teaching kids how to speak up for themselves. And like you said, in a safe way, but to address it head on. Because, you know, I reflect on my own school experience. There's a ton of bullying that I experienced and that I saw, you know. But as a young person, I don't know, outside of unpacking it with parents and maybe thinking about, like, okay, you could address it this way, I feel like I lack the tools to really navigate that challenging experience, right? And so I really appreciate the work that you're doing in this sense.
And what we're discovering in general with positive school climate work, I don't know if you've had any speakers from the National School Climate Center. That's a great organization that works with schools to create a positive school climate. When you create that positive school climate, again, you're creating those relationships and the belonging to allow students to feel part of it. And that just shifts that. That shifts both the sense of being a victim by those who get bullied and the need to be mean by those who do the bullying. And of course, it's not always totally simple. You need additional resources. Sometimes you need counseling, need to work with the parents. In the Inclusive School Program Guide, we have also a session with PowerPoints for the parent education too, because you need to bring the parents along. So this stuff is complex. And it's not like a one shot. I think a lot of people address bullying like, say, oh, we'll bring an assembly and kids get really excited and the school hires some great speaker to motivate the kids. But it does. The research shows that it's only with sustained effort to address bullying, create a positive climate, that bullying will stop or be reduced. It'll never go away all the way, but it'll be reduced.
You know, what I'm interested as we're talking about bullying, as we're talking about identity, safe cultures and classrooms, you know, we focus on the kids, which we should, but that means sometimes we forget about the adults and the teachers. So where does teacher identity safety fit into creating an identity safe school?
That's a really important question. And actually, in the new book we're working on, there's going to be a whole chapter on teacher identity safety, because teacher identity safety is something that you can't give it unless you have it, right? And so if you have an environment where teachers are afraid to go into the lunchroom because there's so much grousing and complaining happening in the staff room, that's not going to be a place where they're going to feel so comfortable and welcome to create it for the students. So how do you do that? Well, like I said, in that guide, we do have a section on actually as part of the Identity Safe and Inclusive School Program, we actually have one whole area that we call, I'm going to get the exact name for it, it's Compassionate and Support of Staff. That's what we call it, the Compassionate Support of Staff. Because if principals and leaders are not compassionate with their teachers and supporting them in a range of ways, teachers aren't going to feel that identity safety. And when I do workshops, which, for example, I'm doing a workshop in a couple of weeks at for new teachers, I have a whole section where teachers talk about their own identity safety. And then I ask them, let's pay it forward. How can we bring that for kids? So you want to hear the teachers' experiences and voices. You want to have staff meetings that don't feel like gotcha, but feel safe and, mm-hmm. and supportive. You want to create a staff room where people feel safe to go in and comfortable, and an environment where we're not trashing the kids, which sometimes happens in staff rooms as well, people critiquing, saying bad things about kids and parents. And teacher identity safety is same as students. We don't want it to be colorblind and ignore the differences. I remember a situation where in a middle school where there was a PE teacher and she got married to another woman and wanted to post. She put the picture up on the staff, I guess in the staff lounge, where everybody put pictures of their families. And the principal asked her to take it down. And you can imagine how she felt right. and what kind of environment that might be where people feel like they have to hide who they are. That doesn't necessarily mean that everything about our lives we share with the kids necessarily. I remember I had a teacher come to school one day talking to her second graders about breaking up with her boyfriend. I'm not talking about that.
Yeah.
But I am talking, so there's appropriate places for certain things. But I'm talking about celebrating the differences that we have among the staff and allowing that to come forward in a positive way as well.
I appreciate it. Thank you. And I know you have some resources and bonuses for listeners, but before we go there, I just have some questions I'm interested in that I ask a lot of the guests on the show. One of them would be, when you think of the word leader, who's the first person that comes to mind?
It's interesting. I thought of my mother. I don't know. I guess that's why you ask it and you surprise someone and they think of it. What was interesting about my mother was that I never thought of her as a leader as I was growing up because my father was a cantor, a Jewish cantor, and he was like always in the limelight. My mom was just quietly going at what she was doing. And it didn't occur to me. And then the last year of her life was the year I moved to the Palo Alto School District where she'd been a teacher for 30 years. And she was so honored and respected. And it was really sad that she died very suddenly that year. We weren't expecting it at all. But I was so lucky that I got to hear what she did. And she was actually named the National German Teacher of the Year, not that year, the year before. Mm. And that's also a model for me as a leader because, I grew up in the shadow of the Holocaust. And she actually went back to Germany. She made peace with a lot of the people that she knew who apologized to her. And she started becoming a German teacher. And she was able to both heal and model that she saw that there were good people everywhere and that what we needed to do was to promote that social justice. And I guess that's why she's been such an important leader in my life in a kind of a much more humble way than we think of when we think of the superstar type leaders.
Do you have any routines or rituals? Maybe it's a morning routine or maybe it's a nightly routine that helps you be more successful every day.
Well, when we get into kind of some personal things that I like to do, I like to write. I don't necessarily do it every day, but I have journals for my whole life and that's sort of been a way to kind of get my thoughts out and I love to go back and look at them, all the things I've changed. I also do a daily yoga practice that includes meditation. I think that's something that's kept me healing from the challenges of being alive. There was a point where I was a school principal. I had three children at home that were school age, and my youngest was particularly challenging. And now I think back, I don't know how I did it. The school had 1,400 students, and it was a year-round school, and it had lots of staff and teachers. And I think what kept me grounded was the writing and getting up early ahead mm-hmm. of everyone to think clearly. Those are a couple of my survival techniques.
And when you journal, is there a specific sort of topic or process you have or questions that you answer?
Not necessarily. I make sure to put the date, and I buy the beautiful bound books. When I started, they were notebooks when I was in high school, but starting probably in my 20s, I bought bound books that you can buy those blank books that are really nice. And then it's a free show, free for all. Sometimes, like right now, I'll write a plan in there. You know, I met with someone to make a plan of how to do identity safety training at the school, and I took all my notes right in my journal. Other time, I still don't make it an open thing for people because I do like to be able to write about my feelings.
Yeah.
And someday I'd like to write a story book with my son who, though he struggled in school, is now a manager in a mental health, county mental health facility, and he's a nurse, and he came through. He's actually also a leader in a very different way of someone who overcame a lot of challenges. And someday I'd like to write with him, and I have it all in the book. His whole, my whole, in my journals, I have the whole story mm-hmm. of my challenges as a parent.
Yeah, I can imagine that. What do you consider your worst leadership mistake, and what did you learn from it?
That's an interesting one. I think of two, but I'll pick one. The one was just picking the wrong place to try and work because I knew it was really challenging and I wasn't able to fix it. The other was, and I think sometimes we think that. I think my first principal experience as administrator, I went into a very difficult environment and said, I'm ready for anything. And I was able to do a lot, even though the environment was pretty dysfunctional and the principal and the vice principal were kind of fighting with each other as I was trying to change things. And so I thought I could do that again at a later part of my career when I took on a superintendency in a beleaguered district, and that didn't work so well. But the other one I learned was something in Palo Alto that's more of a story I feel comfortable sharing was, well, just about the first one, I do think we should be very aware as we take on challenges in administration because mm-hmm. these days it is such a challenging role. And there's so many sources that are attacking the school leaders from all sides that you want to be aware that you can't always fix it all. And I have a lot of respect for people who do turn around places. But I think it's like being really conscious as you go into something, mm-hmm. what you're working with. And the other example is a more kind of concrete mistake I made while I was a curriculum director in Palo Alto. I did that for 10 years. And that's where I met Jennifer Abrams, who's my good friend who introduced me to you. And we had a program there that had been going since before I got there called Effective Elements of Instruction. It was a wonderful model, and we had many people go through it. And so I was now going to make this district-wide. And I did all these things to make it happen, and it really looked good on paper, but it really didn't happen. I tracked all the people that had taken these workshops in effective instruction that were wonderful with a presenter called Marilyn Bates. And I trained an in-house staff, and that's where Jennifer was the leader of that group, to do training for all our new teachers. And then I proceeded to try and train everybody else, but not only one-shot training, but keep it going. And I didn't have, as a district leader, enough of the principals on board with me. And so this is more of a lesson for the people who are listening, who are district people. You can come in with a great program. And in my case, I didn't even bring it. It had been there. It was very popular. Very good. It was six structured strategies for improving instruction. But the principals didn't buy in enough. And so we did all this workshop, these workshops, but it didn't take a root. And I think the same lesson would be true for principals at a school site when you're bringing in something. And we learned that also with the Not in Our School, which was our bullying prevention program. Mm-hmm. Originally, that the model was student-led campaign to stop bullying. And the person I was working with at the organization kept saying, this will transform your school. And I knew that wasn't enough, that you can't just transform something with students doing it, with one school counselor or school teacher is very motivated. You need the whole staff on board. And that led to, and I actually did a little evaluation study with a researcher on the model of the student-led campaign, and it was wonderful, but that was the big gap. And that led to creating this identity safe and inclusive school program. It's a holistic thing. So those are two examples from my background.
Appreciate you sharing those. Definitely applicable to our listeners.
School leadership is hard work. Why should funding student-centered programs be difficult too? If you're stressed about your budget and where you'll find some extra cash to run a great program for kids, I have a solution for you. Introducing the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2018. In this guide, you will find the best school fundraising ideas available in 2018. My favorite company described in the guide is School Spirit Vending. School Spirit Vending brings hassle-free fundraising to schools through custom sticker vending machines installed in your school. The best part, you do absolutely no work. The School Spirit Vending team installs, maintains, and shares the revenue collected with the school. You can learn more about School Spirit Vending and the other magnificent companies mentioned in the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2018 at schoolzonepodcast.com. Go there now, download the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2018 at schoolzonepodcast.com.
Becky, in addition to Identity Safe Classrooms, what's one book every principal should read right now and why?
Okay. I love this book by Zaretta Hammond, who's a Bay Area educator, called Culture Responsive Teaching and the Brain. It's not a leadership-focused one, but again, the administrators are the ones that are going to make that come alive at their staff and are going to value it. And I've been working with some principals now in different schools. And so the reason I like it, I'm grabbing it off the shelf, is it really is concrete in building awareness, building learning partnerships, and really giving concrete things people can do. And it's a very good partner read with our book on identity safety. And it is something that I think if every administrator reads it, he or she would understand a little more about how the brain connects with the strategies when you're trying to do culturally responsive teaching, that there's strategies that go really well with how people learn.
And if you could be automatically good at something, what would it be?
I'm just laughing when you say that. I kind of hate marketing. And I think that in the nature of our work in the world, like your work with this podcast, it's like, it doesn't do any good if nobody knows about it. So I'm trying to do it as best I can, whether it's marketing my book or the program that I do, or even getting groups, colleges to come to my property in Nicaragua, where we do environmental education and cultural engagement activities in the jungle. It's just that marketing. Oh my gosh, it's so hard. I don't know whether you agree. Maybe you have some good tips for me.
Yeah, I could tell you those offline, but you know, I so connect with the idea, like, you have this baby that is really valuable and can help so many people, but if people don't know that it even exists, you know, what kind of impact are you having? So I connect with that.
And I think that as a woman, and I don't know if you have this as much as I do, and maybe because I named my mother as the example, technically, we don't like to highlight ourselves. We don't like to promote ourselves. And everybody says, well, you're not, if you believe in it, you're not promoting yourself. You're promoting something that you know will help people, but it's still kind of hard to toot your own horn. That's the problem. Another problem I have with marketing.
Yeah, that is tough. You're right. Before we talk about promotions and resources, I'd like to end with this question. What message would you put on all school marquees across the globe if you could do so for just one day?
Oh my goodness. Well, in the world of marketing, you spend days and months honing your brand, right? But I would just put something that, and so I'm not going to hone the wording, but something that shares the idea of create identity safety for everyone, where everyone feels that they are valued and appreciated and they belong here at this school. Or we create identity safety for everyone, something like that. To really, you know, as Dorothy, my co-author, who sadly died this year, she's the one that put the places to belong and learn. That's what an identity safe place is, a place to belong and learn and connect.
That's a beautiful phrase there, a place to belong and learn and connect. I really like that. Well, Becky, thanks so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. I know that you have some type of promotion or resource for the listeners. So can you share about that? And then what's the best way to get a hold of you?
I have a website, BeckyCohnVargas.com. And it's BeckyCohnVargas. I don't have any hyphens or anything, .com. And that's where my website, it has information about the book, Identity Safety, Nicaragua, everything there. And then in terms of the materials, I will send you the book, Identity Safe Classrooms, Places to Belong and Learn, which has a foreword by Linda Darling Hammond and is available on Corwin. And I do have an author's discount if people buy in bulk through me. It's a special discount they give. And the school guide, the Not in Our School Identity Safe and Inclusive School Program, is available electronically. You can get a school-wide license for $199, and it has the four guides. It has all the PowerPoints that go with the teacher training, has films, it has like a flash drive, or in the download electronically, you can download their 27 different tools and materials and films you can download there. And we do have a promotion, a savings with that. If you buy the classroom guide and the student-led campaign guide, we have a deal going for Bullying Prevention Month that you save $25. It's so I'll send you the link to that. And I guess those are my promotions. I'd love to be in touch with people. I give workshops, and I given workshops around the U.S. and also Germany and Nicaragua. So I'll go to lots of different places. And I just had a wonderful 3-day workshop in Lake Arrowhead, California, on the Identity Safe and Inclusive School Program, where I worked with all the school leaders. It was only the administrative leaders on how to implement the program. And it was 3 days. It was really, really wonderful. But I can do shorter ones as well.
Great. Well, listeners, you know all those valuable resources Becky was talking about, the books we talked about, they'll all be linked up for you in the show notes. And Better Leaders, I want to thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life's 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Becky, and that's Becky with an I. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Becky in the search bar. In the show notes page will pop up. You'll get the highlights of the episode. Again, links to the resources and the best way to connect. Becky, thank you for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thank you so much. And thank you for what you do, Daniel.
Better Leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show, and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across, links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well? If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.